You are listening to Mind Over Matters here on KEXP 90.3 FM Seattle. It is 8:28, and we're getting started a couple minutes early this morning with none other than Jov Parrish, co-editor of Eat the State, columnist for the Seattle Weekly, workingforchange.org.
Workingforchange.com, yeah.
In these times.
Alternate. Yeah.
I've been seeing your name a lot this week.
Yeah, I've been busy. Many of us have been. It's been a heck of a week. We had planned to do this program on the primary elections endorsements, and of course, it's kind of been preempted a little bit. I will run through, so get your pencil and paper ready, as they say on Counterspin, toward the end of the program, the last 5 minutes or so, the non-mayoral races. We talked about the mayor last week. That'll be on the primary ballot come Tuesday. If you want other information on the primary, since we do want to spend most of our time on the attacks and their aftermath and what's next. We also have the issue of Eat the State that came out last week that covers, it's actually the fifth anniversary issue, has a lot of other cool stuff in it, it's a double issue, but it also has the electoral endorsements that we had. Now, because the Independent Media Center is closed for renovations, and this of all possible weeks, we've had some difficulty getting those out, and it is also not up on the website yet. So if you would like to get those emailed to you directly, you can email me at gparrish@seattleweekly.com or ets@scn.org, and I'll send them on to you. And we'll repeat all that information again at the end of the program.
G Parrish with two R's.
With two R's, and G, not J. Yeah, and Seattle Weekly is all one word. So we'll get back to that at the end of the program. I want to spend most of the program today talking more about what's next. I mean, we just heard a half hour talking about the media coverage, and of course media is a huge issue, both on what we've already learned this week and what we're going to be facing, especially if we have any kind of a military action, especially if we have any kind of prolonged military action. As the gentleman just said a couple minutes ago, that's when media in this country gets to its lowest state. But there are also a huge number of other issues to be brought up. You know, for people who want a better world, a more just world, the terrain on which we fight those battles has shifted for almost everything this week. And there are some immediate issues that we have to deal with. There are some other more long-term issues that we need to be aware of pretty quickly. There will also be, and this is something, again, that we'll announce once more toward the end of the program, for people who want to, this is one of probably the most immediate issue, is the form of retaliation that the United States is going to take. And bear in mind, it is retaliation, not justice. What we saw this week, even though it was framed otherwise by our politicians and by our media almost immediately, was a crime. It was not an act of war. You know, hijacking one plane is a crime. Hijacking four planes does not then become an act of war, no matter how horrific the casualties that result. But we're going at it as though it were a war, even though we don't have any evidence, at least none that's been announced publicly, that there's any nation state attached to this. It may just be a group of particularly depraved individuals, but it's being defined as a war. It may be used as an excuse to go to war against nation states, against specifically defined areas of territory. It may be used as a pretext for targeting other civilian populations. And probably the most important message we can put out right now is that two wrongs don't make a right. The death of our innocent civilians in this country does not excuse in the future, and certainly not in the past either, the killing of other innocent civilians. So, to address some of those immediate issues and the immediate issue also of the targeting for hatred and bigotry and in some cases physical attacks as well of Arab Americans and Muslims in our country, we are having a meeting of activists and concerned citizens this afternoon, 5 o'clock, University Baptist Church, 47th and 12th Northeast in the U District. Everybody is welcome. One of the proposals that is being brought to that meeting is to have some sort of a large public event, regardless of whether a military action is launched in the next week or not, a week from today, next Saturday. We don't know yet whether that's going to happen, but that's one of the things that's being discussed, along with things like support and solidarity initiatives that the Church Council is already working on for Muslims and Arab Americans, public education forum, etc. Anyway, 5 o'clock this afternoon, University Baptist Church. I talked about and really can't repeat often enough that the United States cannot use the deaths of innocent people to justify killing other innocent civilians. There are other issues, of course, also attached to this, and it really is a shame that the United States once again is really flouting international norms by not going through the justice system, not seeking justice instead of seeking retribution. But one of the other dangers is that the United States and its allies have to be absolutely certain of the identity of the perpetrators. And we saw this even the last time we said Osama bin Laden was responsible for an attack with the African embassies, where we went and deprived the Sudan of half of its pharmaceutical supply, resulting in the deaths of probably more people than died this week on the East Coast out of a completely mistaken zeal to get retribution for the bombings in East Africa. And what we heard at that time was that the United States had, quote, compelling evidence that these things were associated with the attack. And that evidence turned out later through investigative reporting, not necessarily through a whole lot that the United States owned up to be extraordinarily flimsy, if not preposterous. So we have to be certain of the identity of the perpetrators. There are a number of other immediate issues. Folks are talking now, and there have been reports that the Pentagon is preparing now for some sort of an extended campaign or ground war in Afghanistan. That's just unthinkable. It's completely unwinnable. The Soviets certainly found that out as well, just between the terrain, the ethnic conflicts and so forth. I mean, there's just, and the fact that you're doing it to go after a relatively small group of people, and you're doing it in a country that is already occupied. It's occupied by the Taliban. The people of Afghanistan are not in any way, even if it is Osama bin Laden or somebody else who is based there. The civilians of Afghanistan are not responsible for this attack, and you cannot punish them collectively, and you certainly can't punish a country like Afghanistan also for quote-unquote harboring terrorists if, in fact, the terrorists that you're targeting have been there since last Tuesday or were not already guilty of some crime, because otherwise you're punishing a country for harboring somebody before they committed a crime, which is just a total non sequitur. But we're rushing toward this so quickly that nobody's even thinking through the ludicrousness of some of the logic that's being used. We're seeing a tremendous amount of hatred in this country, and again, this is an issue that we need to deal with as activists immediately, toward Islam, toward Arab Americans, toward Muslims, toward anybody who looks like that. There was a Sikh man who was attacked here in Seattle because some drunk thought he looked like he might be from the Middle East. He had something on his head, and of course, all those people come from terrorist countries, right? So we have to take action about that and be worried about that. There are any number of dangers that come toward us from unbridled nationalism, which we're certainly seeing a lot of in the jingoism in our media and from our politicians right now. The conviction that one's compatriots are uniquely virtuous is exactly the sort of thing that motivates terrorists as well. It's what motivated Tuesday's attack, and it can be used to justify almost anything, almost any kind of a horror. We certainly saw that during the Gulf War. We may be about to see it again. It's a very worrisome thing. Another thing that comes both from the prospect of going to war and from the nature of the attack and the need to quote-unquote combat terrorism is that our civil liberties are at great risk right now. There was a poll, I think, on Wednesday saying that two-thirds of Americans were willing to sacrifice some of their civil liberties in exchange for fighting the war on terrorism. And public safety is almost always the pretext it is used to take away our constitutional rights. We saw it with the war on drugs. We're about to see it with the war on terrorism. And, This could take some really nasty and ominous forms. Freedom of speech, freedom of right to assembly, freedom of our right to dissent, to petition government for petition of grievances.
Talking a little more than just what's going to be happening in airports.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Our physical privacy, our online privacy, the ability of law enforcement to keep lists of political dissidents and to harass political dissidents. All of that stuff, there are people in this country with very, very ominous agendas that they have, and this is not conspiracy, this is fact, very, very ominous agendas that they have wanted to see happen for years that they knew would be politically impossible to do, and this is their opening. This is the opening for an awful lot of stuff to get rushed through, just as we saw the Counterterrorism Act push through in the wake of Oklahoma City and the bombing then, which, you know, did an awful lot of things that had absolutely nothing to do with combating terrorism, domestic or otherwise. We saw that stripping the right of prisoners to launch all kinds of appeals, the right of habeas corpus, you know, all the reimposition of the federal death penalty, all sorts of things that happened that had nothing to do with terrorism that got tacked onto that bill. And, you know, who's going to vote against it? It's combating terrorism. And the same thing's going to happen, only 10 times worse this time, unless we're very vocal very quickly about it. And even then it might. So we're at great risk for that. And we have to be very direct in lobbying mainstream media to be reasonably fair, to be complete, to avoid the jingoism, the nationalism, the sensationalism, the prejudice that has really marked a lot of the last 4 days. And I mean, I could just go off for the next half hour, and I won't, because probably many of the people listening have seen and heard some of the same things. I mean, some of the platitudes and some of the just mindless stuff that's been said has been unbelievable. I mean, you know, the headline in one of the op-eds in the Times this week that we must all resolve to continue being Americans. I mean, you know, I wasn't aware that the diaspora had happened that quickly. I mean, you know, there was an interview on NPR with some expert after one of Bush's speeches in which he was talking about, you know, not tolerating any country that, or attacking countries that harbor terrorists. And I forget the exact wording, but it was done in such a way that the expert was asked whether the president meant, you know, harboring in the sense of giving cover to, or whether he was talking about attacking countries, you know, or Afghanistan's actual harbors, you know, their actual ports. And it's like, hello, Afghanistan is landless. It has no harbors. You know, I can't count the number of times when I've heard people talking about bringing the hijackers to justice. Well, you know, you're going to need tweezers and a Ziploc bag to do that. I mean, you know, it's just a lot of mindless things that have been said, but also a lot of things that have very clear political implications in the way the story has been framed. There were basically three sort of emotions that people went through as the story unfolded, particularly on Tuesday. There was the shock, there was the grief, there was the anger. And, you know, we really didn't have time for the grief. And the National Day of Mourning yesterday was really kind of preposterous. I mean, when Kennedy was shot, and, you know, when you have something on this scale, you need a day when everything shuts down. The schools are closed, the businesses are closed, the malls are closed. You know, you don't have a little ceremony downtown or a two-minute thing where you hold a candle or whatever. You know, you allow time for people, if they want to come together in community, to reflect, to grieve with the families, whatever. We really haven't done that in this country. What we did is we went directly from the shock, and in media this had to do with the breaking news story, to the rage, identifying who is responsible, how we're going to retaliate, etc. And when you go to rage without processing your own feelings, whether that's individually or as a society, you do stupid things. You make bad choices, and that's what's being set up. And then the amount of subtle prejudice toward the Middle East, even very specifically toward the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, has been really very noticeable in the media this week. You know, all of the different things about, well, now we know how Israel feels. The footage that was replayed on a number of networks that CNN was showing at the beginning of the week of Palestinians celebrating on their West Bank. You know, a little of that happened. It was shut down. It was very small, very limited, and it was shut down by the Palestinian authorities very quickly. But then there was a report later on in the week that came from Brazil, actually, that said, you know, look, we archived these tapes, and that was the same tape that CNN was showing 10 years ago during the Gulf War. You know, they were using the same tape. You know, and that's not to say the celebrations didn't happen, but still, I mean, you know, you have to be really careful and really aware right now of what the media is showing. You know, remembering the babies with incubators, you know, when Iraq attacked Kuwait, remembering the Gulf of Tonkin incident, you know, remembering, again, the Sudan thing. you know, all of these incidents, and we have all sorts of evidence right now that in recent years when the United States has attacked or gone to war, the United States has intentionally put out deception and disinformation, and the networks knowingly have gone along with it. And unknowingly, they've done quite a bit more. It's a very dangerous time in terms of the media and people's perceptions of what's going on.
All right, so those are the immediate issues. What are the long-term issues that we need to deal with?
Well, one of them is cultural isolationism, and this is a very mainstream one. This one really transcends ideology. I mean, all of these should be mainstream, but this one in particular, you know, you can go through and talk to your flag-waving brother-in-law. But, you know, all the comparisons with Pearl Harbor really don't fit in one important way, which is that Pearl Harbor was the end of America's political isolationism. We'd sat out of the war in Europe for 2 years. We let Hitler, the war against fascism went on without us for 2 years. And in fact, there were a lot of people in the United States who were pretty sympathetic to the Germans. And Pearl Harbor ended that. In the last 50 years, we have been anything but isolationist in this country in terms of its government, in terms of its military, in terms of U.S.-based corporations. But culturally, in terms of all of us as citizens, we've been really more and more isolationist. And our media have cut back on foreign news, both because as the big corporations take over, it's too expensive, but also because they don't think people are interested. The world is getting smaller, and you know, until this week, we haven't been paying attention because we didn't think it mattered to us. Well, it does matter to us. What we found out this week is that some of the grim realities going on overseas, they hold here too. And you know, we have to encourage people, number one, to start paying attention to what's going on in the rest of the world, but number two, to start paying attention to what people are doing on our names in the rest of the world, whether that's a government, whether that's a corporation, whether it's our armed forces, and to hold them accountable, especially for when what they're doing is not consistent with the ideals of freedom and democracy that this country professes to uphold. One of the best ways to prevent terrorism, you know, and you can't do it by imposing a police state on the rest of the world or military occupation on the rest of the world, but one of the best ways to prevent terrorism is not to be terrorists ourselves. And, you know, we have the death toll this week was horrific, but the United States directly and indirectly has been responsible for so many similar or larger death tolls in the last 50 years. And even right now, I mean, it only takes 2 months of deaths from the economic sanctions in Iraq to exceed the number of people who died on the East Coast this week. How many people in this country are even aware that that's happening? And if they're aware of it, they haven't cared. This is what generates terrorists and the rest of the world that hate America. You know, they're not doing it because they're irrational madmen. They're not insane at all. They're engaging in cold-blooded, premeditated murder of mass civilians. And their perception, rightly or wrongly, is that that's justifiable because they think that's what we're doing, too. And in many cases, it is what we're doing, and we have to demand a stop to that. We also need a fundamental rethinking of the role of our military. You know, the reason why our borders were not protected and we did not have national defense is because national defense hasn't been the purpose of our national defense for a number of years. We've been instead worrying about conquering the rest of the world. You know, the Department of Defense needs to start defending us. You know, every other country in the world manages to promote its economic interests without trying to run the world. And, you know, you can also save a lot of money by doing that and use that money to strengthen and promote opportunity and justice in our own society. And that, in the long run, is a much more effective form of national security as well. I mentioned the war on terrorism being long-term, also very much at risk for abuse of power, also very much at risk for an abuse of civil liberties in the longer term. We have to combat the inevitable backlash that's going to happen against immigration, against quote-unquote foreigners. Remember that we're all foreigners unless you want to hand your house back to the Duwamish. You know, be careful about your immigrant bashing.
I thought that was interesting on day one, the double standard of closing off the Mexican border while leaving the Canadian border wide open.
Yeah, that was very interesting, wasn't it? We saw the same thing during World War II where the Japanese were rounded up and by and large charge. The Germans and Italians were not.
Exactly.
Other dangers are what's happening in Congress right now. The blank check being written financially in terms of the response to this attack, in combination with a tax cut for the rich, with the military spending that had already been proposed, the economic downturn that's cut off federal income. The surplus was already gone, and this is likely to mean almost certainly the raiding and privatization of Medicare and Social Security, further draconian cuts in social spending, wasteful, unnecessary new Pentagon toys. You know, if the government claims it doesn't have enough money for all this stuff, why don't we tax the rich and big corporations fairly? That would be a good way to raise the money. We've really gone away from that in the last 40 years somehow. And not only that, but also in Congress, you know, we're looking at Republicans trying to push for quick passage of the energy plan of Bush and Cheney because we can't be dependent on that Middle East oil, and also things like Fast Track. It was announced yesterday that the sponsor wants to push that through in the next month because we have to all unite behind our president. And, you know, lots of unrelated things like that are also likely to be pushed through in the name of supporting our country in this, you know, this time of conflict.
I saw another one of the ironies they pushed through was allowing John Negroponte to be our ambassador to the United Nations. And, of course, he became famous when he was ambassador to Honduras, basically looking the other way while Honduran death squads killed thousands of civilians down there. So
yeah, one of the most appalling aspects of the media coverage this week, and it was certainly cause for a lot of yelling at the TV, was the number of United States war criminals who were being interviewed as experts on you know, what to do about this atrocity. You had Henry Kissinger and Norman Schwarzkopf and Al Haig, and, you know, of course, Colin Powell goes into that category too. But, you know, all of these people, you know, are talking about how to combat terrorism, and they should know. They've targeted civilians for political purposes and to inflict terror. You know, I mean, that's how they made their name. That's what they've done for this country. So, yeah, the double standard on a lot of those points is horrific. And then also, I should have thrown this in with the whole discussion on the military and national defense, but national missile defense has got to die. It is now breathtakingly obvious that the premise that the biggest security threat to this country is non-existent missiles from halfway around the world from a country that can't repair its own typewriters. That is not what threatens this country. And the sinking that amount of money into a big Pentagon toy that has no practical application to the defense of this country is really taking away from the necessary defense of this country and putting all of our lives at risk. And it has to be stopped on that premise alone, let alone all the other reasons it should be stopped. So, you know, those are some of the issues. There are a lot of other issues. We can talk about this for another hour, but we don't really have time. But the important thing on all of this is to act now, you know, to not be paralyzed by grief or anger or whatever, but to pay attention to what's going on, to pay attention to what's being pushed through in the name of jingoism and nationalism and emergency footing and so forth, and to raise a stink, not be afraid to say that our country, right or wrong, does not is not an excuse for committing wrong, that we have to speak out. You especially have to speak out at times like this, because this is when things that are that we're going to regret in later years are most likely to happen.
And again, there's that meeting that's going to be happening today at 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock, University Baptist Church. Please come. And if you can't make it to that meeting today, we don't have a particular contact number at the moment that folks can use. But I would suggest maybe calling Peace Action would be one place to start, or Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility, Nonviolent Action Community of Cascadia. You know, most of the different peace groups, Fellowship of Reconciliation, are involved in these discussions and can pass along information. Church Council of Greater Seattle.
All those
being in the phone book, yes.
All right. Well, with that, we are out of time. Talking once again with Jav Parish, who is co-editor at Eat the State and columnist with the Seattle Weekly. And Jav, tell us about Eat the State.
Eat the State is a little five-year-old now volunteer publication that covers local as well as this week, obviously, global news, information, perspectives, viewpoints, humor sometimes as well. We are coming out. We came out with a special double issue this last week for our anniversary and the election. This next week, we're going to come out with a special little four-page issue on the on the tragedy this past week, and of course probably covering some of the same what comes next type material that I went through this half hour, and then we'll have our regular issue after that the following week. That'll just, so essentially we're out 3 weeks in a row. It's available free of charge in bookstores, cafes, places where you pick up free publications all around town. You can also get it and all of our back issues at our website, www.eatthestate.org. You can subscribe through the mail, especially if you're in a place where you can't find it easily from week to week. $16 for 20 issues, $29 for 40 at P.O. Box 85541, Seattle, Washington 98145. Of course, it costs money for all these special issues and as well, and we don't have a staff. It's all just printing and postage, so donations are welcome as well. And if you missed any of this, or if you have comments or feedback, suggestions, story tips, whatever, our voicemail, give us a call, area code 206-903-9461.
Very good. And you're with us next week?
I am indeed. I was going to be in Tennessee next week, actually, but I decided not to fly.
Your flight got canceled.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, there's also kind of professionally, it's kind of a busy time right now.
Sure.
So, yeah, I will be here next week.
All right. We will see you then.